Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Please help me welcome our speaker, Pete B., a compulsive overeater from Pennsylvania and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Pete.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy. As Catherine said, I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm super grateful to be here today. I've been abstinent since May 17th of 1997, and I've been recovered from this seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body since August of 1997. And when I say recovered, I use the dictionary definition of recovered. And I believe I've returned to normal, meaning that I know exactly what I am, I know exactly who I am, and I know exactly whose I am. And I know what causes injury to me, and I know what doesn't cause injury to me. And I react sanely and normally to those substances and those behaviors that were so very, very troublesome for me in such a long period of time. I have some photos I could share, and I'm just trying to remember how to do that. So just bear with me 1 second. Yeah, here they are. Can you see my screen?
Not yet. Yes, now we can.
Yeah, I don't know how clear, how big, or how little they are, but that's me back in fifth grade. You know, I don't know. You know, the book, our big book calls our condition phenomena, which means we don't know where it comes from. We know it exists, but we don't know where it comes from. So I don't know if I came out of the womb like this or what the situation was, but I was always just bigger than everybody else. I was always fatter than everybody else. And according to me, I always felt like I enjoyed food a lot more than everybody else. I've learned that the level, how much I enjoy food or don't enjoy food, has nothing to do with my condition. The fact that I like food, the fact that it causes ease and comfort, that doesn't make me different from other people. Which makes me different from other people is the abnormal reaction that my body has when I ingest certain foods or engage in certain behaviors, which cause me to get the phenomenon of craving. And once I get the phenomenon of craving, I have little or no control over the amount of food I take. And, you know, I like I said, I don't know if that happened. You know, I was in fifth grade at this point. I don't know if that happened out of the womb, or, you know, the book says that we drink our, you know, the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we drink our way into this condition. Like I said, I don't know where it came from, but all I know is, you know, I've conceded to my innermost self that I'm a compulsive overeater. And the delusion that I'm like other people or ever will be like other people has been absolutely smashed. You know, I've been in the same year, I've been 300 pounds and 200 pounds on several different occasions. I don't have a lot of pictures of myself. This is just me when I was my biggest, and then throughout the years. And this one was the most recent picture, was 2000. And I don't know if you can see my pointer, but 2019. I have more current stuff, but that's enough to give you the gist of the whole thing. So anybody wants to see any more, you could, you know, feel free to reach out to me. But in any case, you know, I announce myself as a compulsive overeater. My disease, like alcoholism, my disease is similar to an alcoholic with alcoholism. Alcoholics aren't drink addicts, and I'm not a food addict. Right. I'm a compulsive overeater, which means I compulsively and impulsively use substances and engage in behaviors that I know are harmful to me. And the harmful component of them is that they cause an abnormal reaction, like I mentioned earlier, the phenomenon of craving. And I got that information out of the textbook for Alcoholics Anonymous, and the one that the Overeaters Anonymous meetings that I go to study, which is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I think does a really, really good job of describing what the condition is. You know, I found my, where's, which square is my timer? I forgot.
Should be Donna.
Okay, I can't see it. So I guess I'm just going to go and I'll shut up when you guys tell me to stop. I have no problem with that. I found my way using Anonymous. You know, is that when I ate as a child, I don't know why I ate. I don't know. I don't know what caused me to eat. I spoke at a very large meeting at a conference, and I spent this majority of the time explaining to people why I ate. And you know, and there's no reason. It's phenomena. I ate when I was happy. I ate when I was sad. I ate when I felt safe. I ate when I felt threatened. I ate when I felt uncomfortable. You know, I hear people talk about, you know, they feel like there was a meeting and everybody was invited to it, but them, and they got the instructions. And you know what? I've been in the recovery rooms for over 26 years, right? And I've been in with regular people for 26 years. And guess who else feels that way? Everybody, sober, drunk, alcoholic, it's a human condition. And for me to blame that on what I was doing to myself was really just an excuse I used to put more of that shit in my body and basically treat depression with depressive with items that cause depression. You know what I mean? Like I could distinctly remember being in fourth, maybe fifth grade, and sitting down at the kitchen table and saying to myself, this is a pound cake. It weighs 1 pound. If I eat this pound cake, I'll only gain 1 pound. You know, like I was aware, there was no secret that the stuff I was putting in my body was causing me to look and feel a way that I didn't want to look and feel. And I knew that it was caused by the food, but I didn't have an ability to not eat that food. You know what I mean? I didn't necessarily pick it up and use it to address something that felt bad for me. I just used it because most of the time I was using it because my body was responding to food I ate a day or two or three ago, because of this reaction that my body has. Remember, the delusion that I'm like other people, or presently maybe like other people, has got to be smashed. I had no idea. You know, my that condition, you know, I found my way toward, you know, at a relatively young age about, you know, into drinking, and I drank not too much different than other people that I hung around with drank. You know, it wasn't, you know, every time I drank, I didn't get into bad situations. I didn't wake up homicidal or suicidal or anything like that. But every time I did, every time I felt that way, I was drinking. And I recognized relatively early on that I had to do something about my drinking when I was about 18 or 19 years old. And I started making decisions in my life to modify the amount I drank, and, you know, cut back. When serious things happen, I would stop, or I would start, you know, I would slow down or find different places, you know, and you know, it only took 10 short years for me to actually do something about that, to really do something about it, which was to stop entirely. Right. And, you know, that's the same experience that I had with food. You know, but yeah, I was a college football player, and, you know, did all these things. I was a weightlifter, you know, and carry around 300 pounds, 6'3", carrying around, you know, 300 pounds, especially today. I didn't look that out of place. You know what I mean? But I just knew that I didn't want to be the way I was, and I wanted to do things to fix it. And I didn't have the capabilities to do so. I had all the I had all the desire to, I had all the resources to, right? I just didn't have, I just didn't know what I had. I didn't know what I was, right? I didn't know what it meant to be a compulsive overeater. You know, after being sober for a number of years, I found my way into Overeaters Anonymous. You know, it took me 12 years to get a year abstinent. You know what I mean? Like a 12 years of trying to get abstinent. And it took me 12 years to get abstinent. And you know, the reason, one of the reasons why, aside from the fact that I really wanted to keep eating more than anything else, I wanted you to tell me a way where I could eat and not have to suffer. But the reason was I never understood the nature of the condition. I never understood the severity and the significance of the condition. I always treated it was like it was a little sister to alcoholism. You know what I mean? Like I had this big, scary alcohol disease. I would never get up in the middle of the night and have a shot of vodka and then go back to sleep and still consider myself sober. But if I had a rough day, you know, people didn't appreciate me the way I wanted to be appreciated or whatever, I'd get up in the middle of the night and have half a jar of peanut butter and then get up the next day and say, hey guys, I slipped yesterday. I'm going to try again. And everybody would say, way to go. Way, you know, we're glad you're back. I would go to OA meetings and I would hear people talk about what the condition was. And, you know, Overeaters Anonymous doesn't treat loneliness, doesn't treat depression. It doesn't treat anxiety. It doesn't treat sexual harassment or sexual abuse. It's not here to treat those things. Now, having a spiritual experience that I've had addressed all those things, but that's not what it is. It's not a group of people that get around and talk about the problems they have with food or the problems they have outside of food. It's a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope about the disease of compulsive overeating. And if you read in We Agnostics on page 44, it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic or compulsive overeater. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience could conquer. Only a spiritual experience will conquer. You know, I was embracing this idea that there are various levels. You know, I hear people say I'm a low bottom, I'm a high bottom, I'm a moderate bottom. I've heard people recently describe this as a spectrum disorder. And some people have, you know, some people never be 500 pounds. Some people, look, this is it. It's like saying, you know, if when you want to stop, you can't. Or if when you decide to, or when you, once you start, you can't control how much you take. That's it. It's like you're pregnant. You know what I mean? There's no, you're not a little bit pregnant. You're pregnant. And that defines what I have. Right. And you know, the doctor's opinion says that it identifies that we have an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. Right. The obsession of the mind, in my observation and in my experience, is not unique to us compulsive overeaters. It's not. There's a reason why it's a multi-billion dollar snack industry. You understand? There's a reason why that is. And there's a reason why the weight loss, weight watch, the, you know, the Payneys and the Jenny Craig and all, there's a reason why those are multi-billion dollar industries. And there's a reason why people rarely sign up one time and lose the weight and they're done. And that's because they have a mental obsession. What is a mental obsession? This time it'll be different. I've done it. So I've not overeaten in such a long period of time. I should be able to do it now. That big a deal. Lots of people are overweight. I'm just going to learn to be serene and overweight. Let me settle for something below what my God would have me be. Right? That's the mental, you put a, whatever the story is, but the mental obsession, very common. I had my family over for a pre-Thanksgiving meal. Everybody decided to go out and get ice cream. Two or three people said, I'm not getting ice cream. There's no way I'm getting ice cream. I'm trying to watch what I'm going to eat. We're going to have a lot of food tomorrow. By the time we got there, they all had ice cream. And yeah, the difference between their mental obsession and my mental obsession is that none of them wanted to commit suicide the next day as a result of doing so. Right? None of them got the phenomenal craving where they got up in the middle of the night and ate all the pie we were going to eat the next day. Right? The doctor's opinion tells me that we're a distinct entity. And what makes me a distinct entity is the abnormal reaction that my body has when I ingest those substances. That's what a distinct entity is. And I couldn't get it in my mind. I couldn't understand that that's the reason why I couldn't stay stopped. And the reason why I couldn't stay stopped is because I never, ever, ever got entirely abstinent. You know, I would go to different factions of Overeaters Anonymous, different groups, different, you know, different things. And I would get abstinent-ish. You know what I mean by abstinent-ish, right? I would identify, I'd say, okay, everybody, nobody here eats flour or sugar. So I'm not going to eat flour or sugar for 10 days, 15 days, whatever. And then something would happen. I say, well, I'll have a little bit. And then I come back. And you know, when you're 35, exercise a little bit, you can get skinny. And skinny looks, from my perspective, recovered. I was now, the phenomenon of craving was always lingering. It was always in there. You know, I started going to other groups and they would say, put the food down for 2 days and work the steps, because our big book says that the mind needs to be clear. And it does, because foods have an intoxicating effect. They have an effect for us, right? Especially in the volumes that I eat, right? So yeah, the mind has to be clear so I can work the steps. But what we fail to see is that we have to, the phenomenon of craving doesn't go away with compulsive overeaters in 2 days. You know, I was eating things that were genetically modified, created by some of the most brilliant minds in the world, the biggest companies in the world with the most money, all designed to trigger this reaction and get me to buy more of them. And what I didn't understand is 2 days, like it took so long for the phenomena of craving to leave me. You know, it was like when I first put the food down, it was like I was in my room, and in the next room there was a baby in there crying, and that crying was the food. And I could try to focus on something. I'd be like, God damn, that baby. And you know, then after a couple weeks, it was like it was two rooms away, right? And then after like 3 weeks, on the other side of the house. But I knew that baby was there crying. You know what I mean? And that's what food did to me for probably 100 days. 100 days after putting the food down, where my body wasn't saying, if it wasn't saying, give it to me right now, get me good right now. It was. The weights, most of the weights come off already. You know what I mean? Just let's just, a little bit isn't going to harm you. Remember that group that said the fifth ingredient? Let's go with that. Let's switch to that. And I'm so grateful for the recovered members of the group that I participate the most in that talked about this idea of what being recovered is all about. And what being entirely abstinence at all is all about. Because here's the thing. It says if you have this condition, only a spiritual experience will conquer it. Here's what I didn't know. I can't have that spiritual experience if my body is reacting to the phenomena of craving. Right? That spiritual experience that when I got sober, I desperately sought. And even thought I had, and I did have a spiritual experience, but I didn't have a spiritual experience sufficient to overcome this illness. Right? Somewhere else in this book says that when the spiritual malady is when the spiritual I know Lynn S could tell me what it says, but when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, right? And what happened for me is, like, I wanted to straighten out mentally, physically, and then spiritually, right? And when I put down the alcohol, I straightened out a lot mentally. And I got kind of in order, organized a little bit physically. But when things got whatever way they got, or I got bored, I needed some excitement, or anything happened, I went to this lesser of two evils, this thing that they sell at every goddamn grocery store and every other thing. And you see people walking around throwing the things in, you know, the things that I can't eat in their mouth like it's recreation and, you know, a day out in the ballpark. And, you know, I say to myself, why am I making such a big deal out of this thing? And that spiritual experience I so desperately sought was just eluded me for so many years. And it wasn't until I actually got entirely abstinence, which means that I sat down with somebody who was actually recovered, who carried themselves in a manner that I feel like I wanted to carry myself in, and explained to me the fatal nature of the condition, and help me sit down and really, really identify what those foods are, what those ingredients are, and what those behaviors are that cause this abnormal reaction. You know, we sat down and we talked about what is the abnormal reaction? And the abnormal reaction is the phenomenal craving. Anything that I eat that insists that I want more, I have to have more, that's a phenomenon of craving. This just popped into my head because I've been thinking a lot about this. And, the way I use food, my alcoholic foods, I was addicted to them. I had an addiction. I was dependent on them. Addiction means that we have a dependence, mentally or physically or both. And when they're stopped, you get withdrawal. And that's what happened for me for food. But food addiction is only part of my problem. Because if it was just addiction, I could address addiction with abstinence. Right? All I gotta do is you can't get addicted to something that you don't use. Start off with an addiction. I got an addiction from the substance. And if I stop using it, I can't get the phenomenon of craving. So I can take care of my addiction with abstinence, right? It's a part of my problem. If you take a building with 100 people in it and another building with 100 people in it, and every day you gave these people heroin, every single one of those people will be addicted to heroin, no matter what. They'll be physically and mentally addicted to heroin. And they will have to stop using heroin in order to not be an addict. If you take these same 100 people and you feed them ice cream, coffee, cake, and sugar all day long and nuts and all that other stuff for 100 days, only about 15% of them will be addicted to food. Only about 15%. See, right? See, my problem goes beyond addiction. My problem, like alcoholism, right? For the alcohol isn't the problem. Alcoholism is the problem, right? Food isn't the problem. Compulsive overeating is the problem. So I have to remember that the only way to treat that condition is by having this spiritual experience. And, I love the name of the group, There Is a Solution, right? Because it says there is a solution. And a solution is having a spiritual experience. It doesn't say that the solution are these 12 steps that we study in this group. It just says a spiritual experience. And there's a whole mess of ways to have a spiritual experience. You can have a spiritual experience through yoga, through religious practices. There's a whole bunch of different ways you can have a spiritual experience. And a spiritual experience will conquer this condition. But I can tell you what my experience is. My experience is that these 12 steps if practiced the way they're outlined in our literature, in entire abstinence, will 100% the psychic change necessary to not want to hurt myself and go back to using those substances. It's 100% successful. It'll never fail. And the reason why it never fails, and the reason why it will never fail, is we do it in entire abstinence and we never go back and revisit those substances that cause the phenomenon of craving. You know, there's a lot of things. You know, I was thinking about it's my wife's birthday, and we just had, you know, steak, and we just had a nice meal. And I was thinking, you know, a lot of the stuff I eat looks like the stuff that gives me the phenomenon of craving. Looks like it, but it's not it. You know what I mean? Like if you put a glass of water next to a glass of vodka, they look exactly the same. They look exactly the same, but they have entirely different effect. Entirely different effect. And the effect to be careful of is the phenomenon of craving. And nothing that I put in my body, absolutely nothing that I put in my body produces that phenomenon. It produces those cravings. And I and you know, so there's a lot of things like, you know, I'm a strong believer, like I have abstinence, which ensures that I can't get the phenomenon of craving. And I have a meal plan that addresses my physical needs. It addresses, you know, everything I need to be to make sure that I'm healthy and well taken care of. It identifies the right portions of food to eat. It identifies the times to eat. And that's a super, super important tool in my recovery, in my recovery. I have I participate in the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous and do the thing that I believe is my responsibility as a recovered member of Overeaters Anonymous. And what the AA 12 and 12 says that the reason for my participation is to show up and carry the message about this condition, as well as the message about the program of recovery and what that has done for me. And you know, I can tell you know, the weight is, you know, for all my life, I've wanted to be a fit, healthy man that walks free with pride and dignity. I didn't want to have to look over my shoulder or wonder if I was, you know, I said one thing to somebody one day and another thing to somebody another day and figure out if my facts are in order and all those other things. You know, I walk a free man today. I walk a free man today. I go wherever I want. You can serve. I don't care what anybody eats. I have neutrality, but more than that, I have neutrality with everything. Everything. You know, I've worked these steps and continue working the steps on a regular basis, the way that literature explains them to be worked. No more and no less. Right? It says, our book says that half measures availed us nothing. Well, extra measures don't get me any more, right? That they don't, you don't get any more. The only thing we're getting is recovered. And if that's not good enough, you know, Baskin and Robbins and Dunkin' Donuts and all those other stores are right down the street, right? That's all we're getting. I forget where I was going with that one. I was looking at the time and figuring out what I wanted to tie off me. But so in any case, practicing this program as outlined in this book has delivered exactly what it says it would deliver. You know, we talk all the time about these things. Like, you know, we have things to do to produce results. If you do something, you don't get a promise. If you do something, you get a result, right? So the book is full of results that we like to call promises. The only ones that they talk about that'll come about are the ninth step promises. Everything else is a result. And as a result of working the steps, the way that they're outlined, I've had this spiritual experience sufficient to overcome this illness. Now, like I said, overcome this illness, right? Return to normal. Just like I have alcohol in my house because my wife likes to drink a glass of wine every once in a while. I have foods that I don't eat are in my house because I have family members that like to eat those foods. I also have rat poisoning in my house because I'm sorry, exterminating and other poisons in my house because I don't want vermins from outside to come in my house. I'm not compelled to go use any of those things. And I treat them all the same way. You understand what I'm saying? Like, just like, if I was a scientist and I had to handle nitroglycerin, when I'm making my son a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I can spread peanut butter and jelly on a piece of bread and know that I'm not going to lick my fingers because I wouldn't do it like if it's just like if I was spreading paint on a piece of bread. You know what I'm saying? Like absolute total neutrality. I know I can handle situations like I don't, I, you know, I'm by far not a saint, far, far from a saint. And I'm never trying to be one. I was created the way, and I'm trying to live the way I think my God would have me live, right? By doing God's will, showing like God's way, God's will, God's way of life. But I'm prepared for any repercussions as a result of anything that I do. I don't walk in fear or shame anymore, right? I own up to what I've done. I've made amends for the wrongs in my past, right? I apologize or ask for people's forgiveness for the harms if I cause any in my present. And I have an optimistic future that by God's grace and mercy, like, hey, there's a good chance I'm not going to compulsively overeat by the end of the day tonight, and I'm going to get another day, and I am super, super grateful for that. You know, the last thing I'm going to say is because it's coming up on on my time is what I wasn't prepared for when I in 2017 when I came in was how hard it was going to be. Like it was so difficult to really put down the food because I never ever did before. It was always partial surrender, 3 weeks, 30 days, 45 days, but I always returned to the substance. And I realized that if I didn't, and it was explained to me that if I didn't put down the food entirely and take this disease as serious as it needs to be taken in order to overcome it, I was going to continue suffering the way I had been suffering for the 20 years that I was sober and and all those previous times before I even got sober. I was going to continue to suffer. It was like I would take 2 steps forward on this new diet, new program, new this, new that, and 3 steps backward. You know, they call it pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I, by God's grace and mercy, haven't had to face that torment. But it was the most challenging thing that I ever had to do. And I'm just so grateful I have. And I hope that that fills the time. And that was a message relevant to anybody. And with that, I'm going to pass.